I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. As of last Wednesday, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra was one of 17 American symphonies who hire their players for a full 52 weeks each year. As of last Thursday, that is no longer the case. After 8 months of negotiations with the players, BSO management has abruptly shortened its season, cutting all of the events they'd announced for this summer. Does it matter if the BSO plays for 40 weeks each year instead of 52? Does a world-class orchestra have to be full-time? How should the BSO balance the aspiration for excellence with the realities of the marketplace for classical music? What's going on with the state's largest arts organization? I'll talk to players and the BSO's CEO, as well as Nicholas Cohen of Maryland Citizens for the Arts, when Midday starts right after the news. With a stunning announcement last week from the management of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, musicians of the BSO are wondering where the place is for them. I'm Tom Hall, and this is Midday. The BSO is in crisis. Last Thursday, the orchestra abruptly canceled all the concerts and events it had scheduled for the summer. There are performances of a Mahler symphony this weekend and of Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story, from which that aria is written. That's happening next weekend. That will be their last until September, when a new concert season is scheduled to begin. The canceled events include a new music festival, their annual Independence Day concert at Oregon Ridge Park, a performance with Broadway star Leslie Odom, a Harry Potter film, Artscape, a concert with some acrobats, and the Rusty Musicians Academy. As of June 16th, BSO players will not be paid until the new season starts in the fall. Today on Midday, another conversation with the two sides in this dispute within Maryland's largest arts organization. In a little bit, I'll speak with Peter Chomey, the president and CEO of the BSO. And later in the program, I'll talk with Nicholas Cohen, the executive director of Maryland Citizens for the Arts, a group that lobbies for funding for the arts throughout the state. We'll try to take some calls later in the program. Until then, you can drop us an email or send us a tweet. You can also ping us on the WIPR Facebook page, where we are streaming our show. I'm joined now by two members of the BSO who co-chair the Players Committee. Percussionist Brian Prechtel and violinist Greg Mulligan join me here in Studio A. Guys, it's good to see you.
Thank you for having us, Tom.
So, Brian, it seems to me there's two issues that we should touch on, at least to begin. The first is the news itself, and the second is the way the news was delivered and how you all found out about it, which speaks to the notion of whether or not these negotiations have been conducted in good faith. Let's talk about the history of the negotiations. You had a contract that expired in September of 2018. It was extended. Tell us what's happened, you know, essentially from last summer to this summer.
Well, last summer we went on a very successful European tour, and it was a tour that, incidentally, our management went to the state and got money to support. And it wasn't really a tour that the musicians were clamoring to do, but they told us it was important for the organization. And we expressed before the tour even was actually on the books how concerned we were to be coming back from such a big undertaking to be sitting down to negotiate a contract.
And tours are expensive, we should remind people.
And we reminded them that there's a history at BSO of coming back from tours and having labor disputes. And we were assured, oh, no, we will have everything settled well before the tour, and don't worry about it. And that was the message that we were given.
So the tour was in August. Did they expect that the contract would have been negotiated and finished before you left?
That's what they talked about doing. And we tried, but those negotiations were canceled, one of them with less than 24 hours notice. And so we ended up coming back from the tour and sitting down, and lo and behold, management was not ready to negotiate. And we really couldn't come to an agreement at that point. And so we basically were playing and talking from then on until October 30th, when we got the very disastrous proposal that the management has renewed. as of last week.
Right. On October 30th, Greg Mulligan, the management, said the orchestra is no longer viable as a 52-week orchestra, so that needs to be cut to 40 weeks a year. Let's talk again about the manner in which you heard this news. Last Thursday, when you woke up in the morning, did you have any inkling that this announcement about canceling the summer season was going to happen?
No. We had a 10 o'clock rehearsal, and sometime between 9 and 10 o'clock, we got an email from Peter asking urgently for an urgent meeting at 1 o'clock right after the rehearsal. And so those of us who were free then went to the meeting and were informed after quite some discussion about the possibility, which was complete news to us, that the governor might not release the funds. Suddenly, half an hour or 20 minutes into the meeting, they told us, and we're canceling the summer season. So it was quite a shock, and we asked them if they could wait, please, until after our first scheduled negotiation, which was supposed to have occurred this morning, to make that decision and certainly to announce it. And they said, no, it's already done. And as a matter of fact, we found out they had sent the press release out to some reporters and asked them to embargo it until 1:45.
Which is when I received it. Did they link the reluctance of the governor to release the first part of the $3.2 million supplemental grant that was approved by the General Assembly, you know, a couple months ago? Did they link the cancellation of the season to the governor's reluctance to release the money?
That was the implication. I'm not sure they stated that outright. As you know, they've said many times in the press that this won't fix the problem in the long run. Well, okay. But the point was to fix the problem in the short run so that the work group could be created, that the bill also established, and so we could have a summer season. As a matter of fact, the summer season was announced only 5 weeks before May 30th, once the bill was passed by both houses of the legislature. And while I'm at this point, I want to say, there is no financial crisis at the BSO. That is a misstatement, a fact.
And how do you know that?
Because the BSO has, at last report, over $72 million in its bank, so to speak. Over $72 million worth of
investments. What does that mean? That there's a surplus this season, an operating surplus of $72 million? Is that what
you're... No. There's. Keep in mind that how much money you have is a different thing from whether or not you run a deficit or a surplus. In a given year, the BSO might make its budget or it might run a deficit, but that doesn't mean that you're out of money if you have $72 million sitting on the sidelines that you can use. That's in our endowment.
Endowment, that's a different issue. And Brian Prechtel, in terms of moving forward, you have wanted to have a good working relationship with the management of the orchestra. You have players who sit on the finance committee of the board, so they are presumably up to date about the finances. I can't comment one way or the other whether the $72 million is immediately available right now. We can talk about that in a second. But how could this have been handled? What would you have done differently if you were in the management's position? What kind of conversation do you envision could have happened prior to the announcement that the summer concerts were going to be canceled?
I'm glad you're bringing that up, Tom, because I'd say that if I was going to make one major objection, that would be it. The complete turnaround from the cooperative support that we have been undertaking with the management toward getting HB 1404 passed. I mean, they were reluctant at first, but eventually when they realized that this was gaining steam, we joined forces, and they were really doing a beautiful job of collaborating.
And we should remind listeners that 1404 is the bill that Maggie McIntosh, the delegate from the Baltimore City, who's the head of the Appropriations Committee, got through the legislature to be a sort of stopgap measure for the orchestra. The bill, as Greg alluded to, requires a work group to get together, and by the end of October, come up with a fiscal plan moving forward.
Right. So we had been proceeding on all fronts together collaboratively, and finally the bill had passed just last week, last Friday on May 24th, the bill became law, and it suddenly felt like something changed after that happened, and it felt like our partner in this race, the BSO management, sat down in the last leg of the marathon. It's really hard to understand. Not only did they not answer our calls to try to meet, they at the same time were pursuing an additional $1 million loan from the state that they never told us about. And very strange to understand that, because they kept telling us through the whole process, oh, we shouldn't ask for more money because that might scuttle the deal. Well, it's hard to know exactly what went on with all of this, but it's very troubling. And we think that the governor still can release this money and should release this money. And those of you that believe so should go to bsomusicians.org and click on the link at the top of the page. The governor will hear from you immediately.
The governor has a lot of decisions to make, Greg Mulligan. He's also withholding $127 million for school construction. There are $3.5 million to test rape kits, $1 million for Baltimore Youth Works program. There's a lot of things that the term of art is fenced off. The governor is suggesting that we face, as a state, perhaps a $961 million deficit. How should the governor frame his decision in terms of the Baltimore Symphony when these other priorities are clearly things of importance to a lot of people around the state?
Well, that's a question that's a little above my pay grade, I think, Tom. Not to say that all of those other priorities aren't incredibly important. We are experts more on the doings of the Baltimore Symphony, and we very much appreciated the overwhelming votes in both houses of the legislature. I believe the Senate vote was 45-1 or something like that, that recognizes that the BSO is the major symphony in the state of Maryland, the only one that has the worldwide reputation that we do, and that I think the $3.2 million that was given over the term of 2 years was in an effort to try to preserve what we already have and to give this work group some time to study the issues.
And Brian Prechtl, what would the work group, in your estimation, consider? What are the kinds of things that could put the orchestra back on firmer financial footing?
Well, one of the main things that we were going to look at was audience development, what kind of job we're doing in terms of serving diverse audiences and the larger state of Maryland, all really important aspects. The other thing that I think we have to be very concerned about now was that, of course, the legislature got behind us in this effort to get this work group in place and get the money in place. And we seemingly are just leaving them behind, these important stakeholders. And I think that throughout this whole process, Peter Chomey expressed the fact that it would be great if this work group found that it was important to look at how the organization is being supported by the state. It's hard to imagine now how the legislature feels after they got behind us. And then suddenly it didn't seem like we got behind ourselves.
For the last 3 years, between 2016 and 2019, Luke Broadwater reports in the Baltimore Sun that the orchestra has received $8.7 million in state funding. Is state funding would that be the concentration, the first low-hanging fruit, as it were, about moving forward long-term?
It's standard for all arts organizations to receive money from the Maryland Arts Council. In reference, it's a formula, 8% of their operating budget. So ours, of course, is a large number, because we are the largest arts organizations in Maryland. And I think that Nicholas Cohen, who will be on later, can talk a little bit about that. So some of that money is just a function of how large we are. And there have been some extra monies, of course, that have been given along the way.
And we should say that the state has been very generous historically.
Yes.
We are certainly not blaming the state for our financial situation.
But when we talk about how the orchestra has money, because they have talked about not being able to meet payroll for July and August.
Which is not the case.
Right? So when it comes to the endowment, and I don't know off the top of my head whether it's $72 million or more or less, but I do know that Chris Bartlett, who is the person who runs this endowment, which is separate from the symphony itself, it's a separate organization.
In their opinion.
Well, and from what
we don't believe that it is.
Okay, that's a legal thing, and I don't know one way or the
right.
other.
But it's the legal question as to whether or not that is true.
The people who run the endowment are acting on that assumption.
Yes.
So, and he says there is a limit to how much we can provide and still meet our responsibility to keep this endowment intact in perpetuity. And he wrote last January that, unfortunately, we have reached the limit of our capacity to provide greater support.
Well, then let me ask why they didn't reach that limit right before the tour. when in the past, the BSO has often used money from the endowment when money was tight. That is a traditional thing. They've been doing it for years, and it is our belief that they're saying what they're saying now in order to put pressure on us to accept very steep concessions. Speaking of concessions, I'd just like to say—
And those concessions would you know, number about 20% pay cuts for all of you.
Yes, that's correct.
And by the way, since 2003, BSO musicians have signed 7 concessionary contracts. 4 of them were right after the financial crisis in 2009 and 2010, and 3 of them came even before the financial crisis. And each time, BSO leadership told us that they would do a better job going forward in making sure that the financial ship was righted. Mm-hmm. Instead, they've taken our concessions, gone out and spent money on other things, because when you look at total expenses versus musician expenses, it's not the musician expenses that have grown very much at all. It's always the other expenses. So I hope you ask them about that. And then they come back to us because now they think that whenever they get squeezed, if they're running an annual deficit, they can come to musicians.
All right, and Brian Prechtl, just because we have a limited amount of time, and I want to keep moving here. Obviously, there's a huge impact on you as a player in the orchestra, and everybody who plays in the orchestra. We're talking about a 20% pay cut. What's the impact actually on listeners? Because an awful lot of people are saying, well, look, if they play from September to June, that's fine with me. The summer concerts have traditionally not been well attended. It's not that big a deal. The actual impact on the community, at least here in Baltimore and in Bethesda, isn't going to be that serious.
I think in one sense you're right, in another sense you're not right. If we were actually having a constructive conversation about how to move to some sort of a different implementation of the symphony, that would be one thing. But what has been done is so destructive that actually the fallout to not just the musicians who are losing their salaries, all of the stakeholders of the organization is incredibly grave. The people who bought tickets for the summer, the people who wanted to see Leslie Odom Jr. and at once, now twice, it's been canceled. The people who are members of our BSO Academy, all of the people from
the new music
Baltimore,
festival.
Baltimore County who come to Oregon Ridge on the 3rd, although actually we're going to try to do that anyway, but the new music festival that was scheduled for next week, where all women composers, I mean, this was summarily just dismissed without considering them. And also, you have to consider the donors and the people that have been giving. Many of those will be angry or will become apathetic. And ticket holders, ticket buyers, all of these things are going to be hurting us, not to mention, I've already mentioned the legislatures as stakeholders. All of these stakeholders have been really disregarded in the decision-making process. And that is actually far more destructive than the financial cost to the musicians themselves. We're thinking about the organization as a whole, and our leadership should be, and we're afraid they're not.
So Greg Mulligan, in cities around the country, Atlanta, St. Louis, other places, the orchestras have made similar decisions. There are those who simply are saying, look, this full-time model is a nice thing, but it's 2019, and it's different than the 70s and the 80s when these models really came to be. And it's simply run its course. How do you respond to that?
So the St. Louis and Atlanta Symphonies are outstanding orchestras. I've heard them both in the last couple of years because my son was lucky enough to get to conduct them. And they do have a different model. I will point out that in St. Louis, when they went to the 40-week season after having a 52-week season for decades, their annual salary was not cut. And so if our leadership would like to come to us and offer us the same annual salary over 40 weeks, we will be glad to have a conversation about that with them.
But their proposal is to cut to 40 weeks and then cut your pay, cut the pay scale proportionally.
While we're also 20% down in terms of numbers of musicians. It's multifaceted.
All right. We are going to continue this conversation with a member of the BSO management, the CEO and president of the organization, Peter Chomey, in just a minute. But Brian Prechtl, Greg Mulligan, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Brian Prechtl and Greg Mulligan are members of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and co-chairs of the Players Committee. As I mentioned, Peter Chomey is up next. He's the president and CEO of the BSO. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Midday with Tom Hall on 88.1 WYPR.
Music of Gustav Mahler from his Ninth Symphony. The Baltimore Symphony Orchestra is playing this beautiful piece this weekend. They're playing music from West Side Story next weekend. And after that, they're not performing again until the fall. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about the continuing financial problems that the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, Maryland's largest arts organization, is facing. You are welcome to contact us on email or Twitter and on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our show. Joining me now is the president and CEO of the BSO, Peter Chomey. Mr. Chomey, welcome back, sir.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Has the symphony management been truthful with the legislature? The legislature, due to the efforts of Maggie McIntosh, made a Herculean effort to get a $3.2 million grant that was premised, I believe, on the fact that if that money is approved, $1.6 million this year would allow you to get through the summer, not cancel the season, establish a work group to come up with a long-term plan. Now, even though that grant has been approved, you rather abruptly canceled the season. What's going on?
We are deeply grateful to leaders in Annapolis for all that they have done to help the BSO during a critical time. And we worked collaboratively with our musicians to help advocate on behalf of this bill and help it to become law. It's now become law, and since that time, we have learned that final decisions have not been made about a number of budget items in the state's upcoming fiscal 20 budget, including the BSO bill.
When you announced the summer season in April, did you have an expectation that this supplemental grant would be forthcoming? Would you have announced that had you not thought that you would be getting the $1.6 million?
In the spring, we announced our summer season according to our typical schedule. And at that time, all of us believed that we would receive this lifeline, this additional support from the state. And we have now since learned that there's not a strong indication that we will receive those funds in the upcoming year. The very existence of the bill, the fact that the bill was proposed, is because we have had such significant financial problems over many years. You asked before whether the BSO had been truthful with the state, whether we communicated enough with leaders in the state. And just the very existence that the bill has been proposed, I think, is evidence that there is an understanding of our financial problems.
We've got a letter from two leaders of the Republican caucus, Nick Kipke and Kathy Shalega, who say that in the hours since the BSO's announcement, the breadth of their financial crisis has come to light. The BSO revealed that they have lost more than $16 million in the last decade, but there are others in the legislative caucus, both sides of the aisle, who were surprised at the depth of what you're claiming to be the financial problems of the orchestra. Have you been completely transparent with the legislatures, with donors for that matter, about the extent to which you're facing these problems?
During the process when this bill was being considered, we spoke about the fact that the BSO has lost over $16 million over the last decade. And over the years, I think we could have been even more forceful in talking about our financial issues. But we have talked about the fact that we've lost on average $1.6 million. And in addition, we've had some very significant cash flow challenges. After losing money consistently over the years, despite efforts to raise more money, sell more tickets, and manage costs, we've experienced consistent deficits. And after losing that $16 million over a decade, our cash flow situation is very challenging. And that is what has led us to this very difficult decision to cancel the summer season. When we learned that there was not a strong indication that we would be receiving that that money from the state
next... Can you explain what that is? Who's strongly indicated that you're not going to be receiving the money?
This is talking with leaders in Annapolis and understanding where we're at in the budget process. And conversations with a number of people, just understanding the fact that there have been downward revisions in the revenue projections at the state level, and then there's necessarily going to be a number of decisions made and not yet finalized with many pieces of legislation, including the BSO bill.
There are a number of legislators who are encouraging the governor to release this money. Let me be clear. If this money is released, if the governor decides that this is one of the priorities he's going to allow to move forward, according to the will of the legislature, will the summer season be reinstated? Will you be able to make your payroll?
If this money is released, it's going to be enormously beneficial to the BSO. As we've said, during the process that the bill was considered, this support alone is not enough to address our substantial financial challenges. At this point in time, the decision has been made about the summer season. But with that said, we would want to do, you know, everything we can to use these funds to enrich our community through concerts and educational programs.
So even with the money, the 40-week season is now etched in stone, as far as you're concerned.
Now, we have proposed the 40-week season. And let me step back about why we proposed this change to a 40-week season back in October. When we've looked at major orchestras across the country, the largest 21 orchestras by budget size, of those 21, 7 of the 21 have seasons of less than 52 weeks. So we made this change to help us make additional progress to move toward a sustainable business model. But it's important that this is just a proposal. So we are our contract negotiations are continuing. It's very important for everyone to understand that it's not simply set in stone. It is part of that conversation, part of the negotiations, part of the collective bargaining process.
Well, help me understand. How is it a proposal if the summer season has been canceled? You're not going to pay people after the 16th of June. How is this a proposal? This seems to me to be an action, not a proposal. Yeah.
And so let me just talk about that a little bit. In our proposal, there would be compensation during the summer. And this is similar to what other major orchestras have done. During the 40-week season, there would be compensation during that 40 weeks. And then during the non-working weeks, there would be compensation. A stipend would be paid during those 12 non-working weeks. And we've seen a similar approach in the St. Louis Symphony, another major orchestra, and the Detroit Symphony, another major orchestra. Those are two examples. So there would be compensation during the summer.
If a negotiated agreement to that effect takes place between now and the 16th of June?
That is right.
That's in 12 days.
And it's very important that we get back to the negotiations table as quickly as possible. We were originally going to have a negotiation session today. That's been rescheduled. There's more time needed to prepare, but we need to get back to the negotiations table as quickly as we possibly can.
As of today, the last concert that's scheduled is a performance of West Side Story with the film, and Maren Alsop's going to conduct it on the 16th of June.
That's absolutely right.
As of Monday the 17th, will you be locking out the players from Symphony Hall if they show up to work?
What we need to focus on now is getting back to the negotiations table and working together to reach agreement.
And what does working together mean? You've told them that they're about to experience, as far as I know, you've told them that they're about to experience a 20% pay cut as of June 16th. What does working together mean under those circumstances?
Working together means that we work together to look at our financial challenges and that we move forward to have a sustainable orchestra so that our community is home to an exceptional orchestra for many, many years to come. Working together means that we continue our conversations at the negotiations table. I used to be a professional musician. I was an oboist for many years. I recognize this is an extremely difficult situation, and we don't want to be here. We're very disappointed to be here, and at the same time, we must take additional steps to help preserve the BSO.
What does making the payroll mean for July and August? Because we've heard the term that you've used and others have talked about observing this, that the orchestra is unable to meet the payroll for the next 2 months. Who's on that payroll? What does the budget call for in terms of, for example, players' compensation in July and August?
And this is something that we've been talking about for a number of months. We have members of the orchestra on our finance committee, and we have been looking at our cash flow projections and those tremendous challenges over the summer. And it depends on how our conversations go at the bargaining table, who would be on the payroll this summer. And we want to find a way to move forward and reach agreement on a proposal. But it is very, the severity of our near-term financial challenges and the fact that our cash flow is so tight is a major factor with our issues. Any organization, any family would like to have, let's call it a rainy day fund, just in case, so they have 2 or 3 months of cash on hand. That's not something that we've had at the BSO. That's not something we had for many years. And the fact that we have such difficult cash flow challenges is a major factor in why we've had to make the decisions that we've made. There was a special board of directors meeting on May 29th, and we talked about this with the board, talked about the potential actions that we could take and what we needed to do to help ensure that we did not miss a payroll. And the next day, on the 30th, is when we had the urgent meeting that Greg and Brian talked about. I wish we had more time for those conversations, and due to the urgency of our financial issues, we needed to make a decision and move forward quickly.
Will you make the payroll in July and August now?
We are continuing to watch cash flow very closely, and we are going to do everything we can to make that happen. One of the additional steps that we've taken is to talk with the state about a potential $1 million bridge loan. We're in active discussions related to that. That's not something that had come up before, but once we learned that final decisions had not been made regarding the $1.6 million in the bill that was passed, then we said, well, given that final decisions haven't been made, we know you care deeply about the BSO, and could you help us? And that's what led to that $1 million loan conversation.
Does the payroll include any compensation for the musicians in the months of July and August?
So our payroll projections, it depends on what happens at the negotiations table. And our proposal includes the stipend that I talked about, where our musicians would receive that for those 12 non-working weeks. So in that case, yes, it would.
You proposed that the orchestra go to a 40-week model as opposed to a 52-week model last fall,
yes.
Last October. The players said, we're not for that. We want to talk about it. You've been talking about it for 8 months. We have members of the legislature saying, we voted for this bill because we thought it was going to give you a little bit more time to figure that out. You know, again, when it comes to good faith, I mean, have you been negotiating in good faith with the legislature? Have you been negotiating in good faith with the players if all of a sudden, Thursday afternoon, there's an abrupt announcement that the schedule for the summer has been canceled? This is not what the legislature signed up for, and it's certainly not what the players were expecting, given the bill 1404 passed in the House and Senate.
Yeah, we greatly appreciate the advocacy and the help of so many leaders in Annapolis to help the BSO. And all of us wish that this the $1.6 million could be available and to have certainty about that for next year. And as we've said during the process, that generous support alone is not enough to address our substantial financial challenges.
But was the legislature aware of that when they voted for the bill?
I believe so, because when in my Senate testimony, the written testimony that we provided says that that support alone is not enough. I think in retrospect could have been even more forceful talking about the urgency of our cash flow challenges, and at the same time, the very fact that the legislation was introduced is an indication that there is an understanding the BSO has very significant financial challenges.
Yeah, you may find that that's not the case. The legislators that I've talked to in the last 48 hours were surprised to hear that the either the bridge loan or the $3.2 million bill in Maggie McIntosh's proposal weren't going to be enough to get you through October. Now, let me ask you the same question I asked Brian Prechtl, one of the co-chairs of the Players Committee. What does a way forward for the long-term fiscal security and fiscal stability of the BSO look like? They mentioned, first off, you know, more state funding. What's your notion? If this work group does ever get back together again and thinks about how to keep the orchestra solvent moving forward, what does it look like in your view?
And before I answer that, I'd like to one brief comment related to whether leaders in Annapolis and legislators were surprised. I think that there is a good understanding of the fact that the BSO has had very substantial financial challenges. Where I think that some people may have been surprised is that the severity of our near-term cash flow challenges may have not been fully understood by everyone. But with that said, I do believe that there is an appreciation for the substantial financial challenges. Looking ahead, thinking about your question about the long term, if we could do one single thing, it would be to grow our endowment. Our average loss has been about $1.6 million per year. And if we could grow the endowment as we are working to do, then that would help us make great progress toward a sustainable model. And I'll give you a specific example. Our Second Century campaign has now exceeded $47 million on a $65 million goal. Some of those funds have been received. Some of them are estate gifts, and we won't receive them for a number of years. But if we could increase our actual endowment available for operations by $40 million, that $40 million at a 5% draw would generate $2 million per year. And that would be on a consistent basis and give us that long-term solution and approach to get to a sustainable model. That would be the single biggest thing that we could do. And other orchestras have seen that happen. And I'll give you one example. The St. Louis Symphony, which has a budget not too much larger than ours, has an endowment of $225 million.
$72 million the correct number for the size of the endowment currently?
Our endowment that's available for operations is approximately $60 million, and there's an additional approximately $10 million endowment that is designated for to help support the operations of the Meyerhoff, the Joseph Meyerhoff Symphony.
And are they separate entities? There's a dispute about that in this last segment.
The endowment is a separate entity. There's a separate set of endowment trustees that has fiduciary responsibility and that must take into account the intentions of the donors that gave to the endowment.
So when Chris Bartlett, who runs that endowment in January, wrote that that organization, the endowment part, was no longer able to fill the gap in expenses and revenue with the symphony, will he be able to change his mind if you go from $72 million to $120 million, which is what you're talking about?
When our endowment trust chair shared those comments back in January, he was doing so thinking about what the endowment has done over the years. I'll give you an example. The endowment in recent years has loaned the BSO $5 million to help us get through. And there's only, as the endowment trust has told us, there is only so much that the endowment can do. And I don't know if this view would be changed. I do know that we have a number of friends of the BSO who want to see us take definitive steps to move toward a sustainable financial model so that our community will be home to a great orchestra for many years to come.
As of June 1st, you had severe financial problems. It caused you to make this announcement about canceling the summer season. What's the difference between June 1st and September 1st? How are things going to look on September 1st in 2 months?
In September 1st, on September 1st, we'll start our new season. We would receive some additional funding from the state as part of our annual grant that comes through the Maryland State Arts Council. We would also have our endowment draw for that next season. And there's a number of grants and donations that we receive typically at that time of year. And we will also continue to work very hard all during the summer to raise as much money as we possibly can and continue to look at our expenses to move to a more sustainable position for the long term.
Is the BSO facing bankruptcy?
At this time, we are not. We are working to address our challenges without taking a step such as that.
What can you say to those donors and those members of the audience? The musicians got enormous support and applause from people who've been in the hall over the last few times that the orchestra has played. What do you say to them in terms of restoring trust and a working relationship between the management and the players?
Our musicians are among the best in the country. We have one of the best orchestras in the country. I used to be a musician. I have great admiration for our musicians. We have worked collaboratively to help this bill to become law, and we need to focus our conversations on reaching agreement on a new contract.
Peter Chomey is the president and CEO of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Thanks for your time, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tom.
If you want to support your BSO, you can join them this weekend in Baltimore and Bethesda for performances of Mahler's Ninth Symphony, and next weekend for a screening of West Side Story with the BSO playing the score live. We've got information about those events at our website, wypr.org/midday. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, the perspective of Nicholas Cohen. He's the executive director of Maryland Citizens for the Arts. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Midday with Tom Hall on your public radio. This is 88.1 WIPR.
Thanks, Matt. It is indeed midday. And by the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, it wasn't by any means the greatest game ever played, but it was one of the weirdest. And it was part of a larger story about race and inequity in Baltimore. The game was one that the Baltimore Orioles played against the Chicago White Sox 2 days after the riots and uprising that followed the funeral of Freddie Gray in April of 2015. Longtime Baltimore Sun sports reporter and columnist Kevin Cowherd has written a book about that game. It's called When the Crowd Didn't Roar, How Baseball's Strangest Game Ever Gave a Broken City Hope. We'll talk to Kevin Cowherd about his new book tomorrow here on Midday. My next guest is Nicholas Cohen, the executive director of Maryland Citizens for the Arts, which advocates for public funding for the state's arts institutions. Later this week, Maryland Citizens is joining with the Maryland State Arts Council, the State Department of Education, and a group called Arts Education in Maryland Schools for the first ever Maryland Arts Summit. We will try to take a couple of calls if we have time. Our phone number is 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. We didn't take calls in the first part of the program or mention the emails because I wanted to make sure that both the management and the players of the BSO had an ample time to state their case. But Nicholas Cohen, welcome.
Thank you.
What's your take on what's going on, in particular the governor's decision that he faces about releasing this money that the legislature, allocated for the BSO?
Right. Well, you know, of course, as Maryland Citizens, we represent hundreds of arts organizations throughout the state. And our goal is to make sure that the arts sector is a powerful one, which it is. And I think a lot of that has to do with the support we get from the Maryland General Assembly and the governor. Over the past 5 years, we've seen historic funding for the arts, and that means to the Maryland State Arts Council. And so I think, you know, it's right now where we are, as the listeners have heard, it's a difficult situation. But it remains to be seen what the governor decides to do. It's the fiscal year for the state starts July 1st. We haven't heard that he's not going to release the funds. And I think we saw a great outpour from the public that support the BSO, that they felt that they support that bill that came out, that the Maryland General Assembly put out. So I think we're waiting to see what he decides to do.
But you have no reason to believe at this point that there are indications, as Peter Chomey said, that he's not going to release the money.
And again, we haven't heard. I mean, I think from what I've seen, the governor's PR office, again, there's been no inclination. I mean, the only thing you could say, he didn't sign the bill, but that happens in government. He could have, I guess, if you could say if he really didn't like the bill, he would have vetoed it. But he didn't do that. So I think it remains to be seen come July 1 what actually is going to happen.
So Jessica sends a comment on Facebook. It says, I think it's a big mistake to cast this problem as a labor dispute. The board and management of the BSO have a fiduciary responsibility, not only to their employees, but to the city, the state, and all of the donors who supported this nonprofit organization. They have not fulfilled their fiduciary responsibility, and they have endangered a precious cultural resource, which adds to the value of our city and region immeasurably. To what extent can taxpayers, supporters of the BSO, or even people who don't give a hoot about the BSO, expect the management to run the railroad in a way that's fiscally profitable, or at least break even?
When we advocate for public investment in the arts, what we always say is that we try and show that the arts sector, they're good stewards of public investment, so tax dollars. And I think what we heard in today's segment is that there needs to be a creative solution for how the Baltimore Symphony can become good stewards of this large appropriation they get from, the grant they get from the Maryland State Arts Council, which is that greater appropriation they get from the state government. What is the creative solution to make sure that this is sustainable, not just this season, but for many seasons to come? And I think one thing I will say to that is the Baltimore Symphony employs, many staff, many musicians, and so there's people's livelihoods at stake. So what does that mean going forward to make sure that the last thing we want to see is for the symphony to close its doors, but also we don't want it to see it in a diminished sense either.
So you're hosting this art summit along with other organizations starting on Thursday. I wonder, is the BSO kind of sui generis because they're so big? I mean, the budget is somewhere in the vicinity of $29 million, as I understand it, way bigger than anybody else in the state. Are there particular considerations that need to be given to the BSO that don't necessarily need to be given to the BMA or Strathmore Hall or the other places around the state that receive state funding?
No. I don't think so. The way we look at it, we represent hundreds of arts organizations and thousands of independent artists. That's like we always say that. And as we say, our motto is one voice for all the arts in Maryland. And that really means that all of us, all arts organizations and artists, we have to hold ourselves accountable in the same way. It doesn't matter if you're a $29 million organization, arts organization, or if you're just started as a painter or a graphic designer in the arts field getting a small state arts council grant. You have the same level of fiduciary responsibility and also passion that you bring to bring that art to the community. That's what we look at. So no, everyone gets treated. We believe that everyone deserves to be treated the same way.
What's the climate for arts funding? The Symphony Management has alluded to the lack of philanthropic capacity, meaning there aren't enough donors to sustain the symphony in its current model of 52 weeks on the payroll. And those weeks include 9 weeks of vacation for the musicians. The management's proposing to cut that to 4 weeks vacation. They also get 2 weeks of what's called relief weeks, where they can take off if they've been injured. But in terms of other organizations around the state, how would you say the climate for arts funding is right now?
I mean, I feel that in Maryland, I'll go to the state funding. We're third in the nation in per capita spending on the arts. That means the Maryland State Arts Council, the money they get, the appropriated amount, which this year was $24.4 million. When you compare that nationally, that's number three. And so that's getting divided over, many organizations investing in them quite heavily. And then you're seeing support in rural, in urban, suburban areas. And arts organizations are thriving. It's not to say that there isn't some struggles. We all struggle, but there's a lot of access. There's a lot of investment in the arts. So it's not easy. It's not an easy climate. And I think there are ways to be creative to find other funding sources and other revenues that you can build upon, as long as you're really investing in the community and the community believes in what you're doing and what your mission is.
Because you are connected to so many arts organizations and artists as an advocate and as a person who convenes people the way you're doing this weekend in this arts summit, what do you see as the way forward? What do you see as the things that the folks in this work group, if it ever gets its act together, can come up with for long-term solutions to the symphony's problem?
Well, I think, first of all, I think the staff, the management, and the musicians, they're all passionate people. We've all heard that in the past hour. There was a lot of passion there. People love what they're doing. This is art. This is personal. So I think for me, we want to, what I think Maryland citizens wants, because as we always say, a rising tide lifts all boats. We want the Baltimore Symphony to be successful. We want to make sure that they're also listening to their community. And I mean that, this is the Baltimore Symphony. So what does the community need in this city? I know they also play in Bethesda, Montgomery County. That's also part of the equation. But, in that bill with the working group, I mean, I'm going to put the money aside. I mean, I know it's easy for me to say I'm not running a $30 million organization, but money aside, that work group, part of that legislation, which I really like, talks about methods to diversify access to the symphony. And it's hard. People define access in many different ways. But I think one of the keys, maybe a solution to what that we're going through, is what does that access mean? And how do we give more access to residents of Baltimore, residents of Montgomery County, residents of the state to the symphony, and empower communities to go to the symphony and feel like it's part of who they are?
A question a lot of folks have been asking for a long time, and let's hope they come up with some answers to that. I appreciate your coming in, Nicholas. Thank you so much. Nicholas Cohen is the Executive Director of Maryland Citizens for the Arts. They are co-sponsoring this week's first ever Maryland Arts Summit. It happens Thursday through Saturday on the campus of UMBC, and we've got information about that event on our website, wypr.org/midday. And Nicholas, very quickly, is this summit sold out?
It actually is. It's sold out, but we're going to do it next year, so keep an eye.
All right, keep an eye out. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Kevin Cowherd talks about his new book, When the Crowd Didn't Roar, How Baseball's Strangest Game Ever Gave a Broken City Hope. It's about the Orioles game that they played to a near-empty stadium following the unrest in Baltimore back in 2005. 15. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared was recently recognized by the Daily Meal. Menu and hours at joesquared.com. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming right up after the NPR newscast at the top of the hour. Today is Eid al-Fitr, so we send our best wishes to all who are celebrating the end of the Ramadan fast. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.
You've been listening to Midday with Tom Hall on your public radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR.